Bitcoin needs to be attacked. Every attack that's possible against Bitcoin needs to happen to demonstrate to the world that Bitcoin can survive every type of attack that can be foisted on Bitcoin. I think the idea of being heroic is a very important idea. I think everyone should strive to be as heroic as they can be, because there is a choice here, right? To stand with integrity and not sell out and not do something that's a compromise for a short-term thing is heroic. And I see that in the Bitcoin community. Like, heroes look out for the little guy. And that's what you see in the Bitcoin community. Don't tell me there are no heroes in Bitcoin. Just be one.
This is the Freedom Footprint Show, a Bitcoin philosophy show with Knut Svanholm and me, Luke DeWolf.
And we love to expand our freedom footprint. We hope you do too. The best way to do that is, of course, to emit as much freedom dioxide as possible. The best tool we have for doing that is, of course, Bitcoin.
Before we dive into today's show, we'd just like to tell you a little bit about how you can support us. First, to support us directly with Bitcoin, visit our Geyser page at geyser.fund/project/freedom. Or you can send us sats directly to freedom@geyser.fund. You can also support us as you listen by listening to the podcast on Fountain. The app is available on Apple and Android, and you can stream sats or send a boost. It's the easiest way to support the show just by listening normally.
And if you don't care too much about Luke, you can always visit knutsvanholm.com, where you can buy my fabulous wine, my books, and a t-shirt or two. And if you don't feel like supporting your fellow Bitcoiners at all, at least like, subscribe, and brush your teeth.
But seriously, that stuff actually helps. It would be great if you could subscribe to the YouTube channel, like the videos, send us a comment, or leave us a review. All this stuff really helps the show, seriously.
Click the damn bell. So thanks for tuning into the show, and we hope you enjoyed today's episode.
Tomer, welcome back to the Freedom Footprint Show.
Oh, yes, I've been here before, but it was on Zoom, so this is different.
Yeah,
This feels like a proper welcome to the Freedom Footprint Show.
And you were
show.
Chasing a dog or something last time, or what was that?
Oh, that's possible. I can't remember all the details, but I have a couple of dogs, and one who I've had for the last year and a bit as a puppy and is very rambunctious and energetic, so I might have been chasing a dog.
We were just talking about the prices of meat here. As in comparison to Canada.
Yeah.
Like, what's your experience?
Well, I've eaten one steak here, which was a huge 1 kilogram steak, like over two pounds at a restaurant, and cost me all in 69 euros. That particular steak, if you could get it, and it's like a dry aged, you know, prime quality, I think it would be over $200 at a restaurant in Toronto. It would probably cost $100 to buy that quality meat at a supermarket and have to cook it yourself, let alone get it served. I was just shocked at how affordable everything was. So I don't know why it's so affordable in Madeira, but it's because I don't imagine that they have a lot of beef ranching here, but I was really blown away, and the quality of the meat was superb.
We have a friend that's just been to the Azores, where they have a lot of the cattle.
Okay.
So they import the meat from here to from
okay,
there
that's where
to here,
from.
And there you can get what did he say? Like, you could get a dry aged tomahawk for like 8 euros a kilo.
Oh my god!
At the butcher's.
Wow!
Like,
I'm moving to the Azores.
Yeah, it's in the middle, literally in the middle of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
even more middly
right.
than here.
Yeah. How far from here is it to get there? Because it's also in the North Atlantic, right?
Yeah, it's pretty far. It's like one third of the way over to the Americas.
Okay.
And the Azores are like, they're not really one group of islands, but three that are scattered in three different, like they're quite far apart. So there's a group of islands in the middle, one group there, one group there.
Right. It feels like these islands are really interesting places to visit. The geography here is stunning. I'm looking out the window here and I can see all the hilltop homes, and I was just on a drive to a villa about 15 minutes from here, and you see all the volcanic formations and what it does to the altitudes, the going up and down and the cobblestone roads. It's really quite stunning. So see, it's nice to see a place this beautiful embracing Bitcoin.
Yeah.
To know that as a Bitcoiner you can come somewhere as beautiful as this and that already it's building. So keeping the momentum going for Bitcoin here feels like something I'd really get into.
Coincidentally, Preston said the same thing, that it seems like Bitcoin is going towards beautiful places, and there are other places in the world that aren't so beautiful and
that's
all this
interesting.
Right.
Yeah, and he talked about his time in the military when he got to see a lot of ugly desert landscapes.
Right.
And now that he's in Bitcoin, which is peace rather than war,
Yeah.
It's getting to all these beautiful places. Right.
Well, this is of the places that I've heard of where Bitcoin is kind of taking root in small areas like El Salvador or Costa Rica. Those are much less developed. Those aren't really first world nations. Over here, this is still an island, so it's not the hustle and bustle of a big city. There's no skyscrapers, but it is very well developed and very first world. There's modern infrastructure for water, there's modern roads. The drivers are still seem to be adapting to the fact that there are lane paintings on the road, and switch from driving on the sidewalk to driving on the roads, but unusual speeds. But it is, you know, of all these places, like I think my own family is not as crazy as I am about Bitcoin. And so when I try to take them and talk them into coming to Bitcoin centered destinations, they're like, are you kidding? We're going to spend some time in a country that's as backwards as, you know, as underdeveloped as Costa Rica or El Salvador. And it's a hard sell. Over here, it's not going to be a hard sell at all. And I've already spoken to my wife about, well, next year, maybe you'll come with me for the last day of the conference and stay for a week later. And that's an idea she can entertain. Whereas El Salvador, she does some Googling. She says, are you aware that things are really bad there? I say, well, they've changed, but it's still a hard sell. Whereas this, I think, is going to be an easy sell, especially if there's more opportunities to spend Bitcoin.
Absolutely. But still, it's still a part of the EU, even though it's counted as an outermost region of the EU.
Sure.
And it's semi-autonomous,
yeah.
But Portuguese territory.
Right.
So it's not this super freedom-oriented thing that you can get in places like Costa Rica or specifically El Salvador. But
yeah.
But I think like whenever you have a group of Bitcoiners in a certain location, you get this Metcalfe's law thing going on. So like the value of that network of Bitcoiners grows exponentially with each new member of the network.
Mm-hmm.
Like all the problems go away pretty fast when you get to a critical mass of Bitcoiners.
Yeah, well, I can imagine in a year, maybe 2 years, if the momentum continues to build here, this could be really extraordinary. The awareness is, I can see the awareness in the locals is kind of very mixed and minimal in some cases. Like at the restaurant we were at last night, they didn't accept Bitcoin. They laughed when we asked if they accepted Bitcoin. But at other places, they are accepting Bitcoin. So it's kind of, it's interesting.
Yeah, they laughed. Yes. Look who's laughing 5 years down the line, right?
Yeah, you should have accepted. You know, I'm the one who's laughing because if you had accepted Bitcoin 5 years ago,
yeah.
Different story.
Still, when we first started the Free Madeira organization, there was nothing. No place took Bitcoin. You know, we started with Orange filling one single cafe. And now when you come here and you look at BTC Map or like there's 30 places or something that accept.
Right.
And
so it seems to me, and again, I'm alien to this, but I follow the stories as much as I can. It seems to me that there's some way to get to some tipping point with some people. If you have enough Bitcoin immigrants, if you will, or the people who come with Bitcoin and want to spend it and are spending it, and there's enough of a push to get merchants to start to accept it, you get a few tipping points. You get a few merchants who get quite excited about it. This is certainly what I hear. It's all secondhand for me, but this is certainly what I'm hearing about what's happening in Costa Rica with Bitcoin Jungle from people who've lived there. And people come and people go, right? But if you have the critical mass, you don't feel the departure of one person as a terrible loss or one merchant as a terrible loss. It's like, okay, well, this people come and people go, but people keep coming. That's what's really interesting to see happening. Like I don't have that where I live in Toronto. There's Bitcoiners, but there's not Bitcoin accepting establishments. It's too sprawling a city. It's too big. You know, you need to find like a neighborhood to try to make things happen in. And yeah, that's just too hard because even the Bitcoiners who are there are too geographically spread out in this mega city.
Yeah, it's hard to get us together. But when we are together, magic happens.
Yeah, you get reminded. I think when we get together at conferences like this, you get reminded of what an extraordinary gift Bitcoin is in terms of bringing out in people who they really are. They're no longer talking to the guy who says, "Well, wow, that's crazy. Did you catch the game last night?"
Mm-hmm.
You're talking to people who are not just awake and all on the same tune, but rather they're each singing their own tune, and it's their own true tune, right? It's not, you know, we were just having drinks with some people downstairs, and everyone's a different personality, or they're not interchangeable. It's not like every Bitcoiner says the same thing as the other Bitcoiner. Some are more radical about some ideas, Some are more radical about different ones. Some are more about love. Some are about what they hate. And they're not all about Bitcoin. Many are about health and fitness or diet or philosophy or whatever. So Bitcoin is really a flourishing of individualization mm-hmm. of all these really interesting people who respect certain principles.
Yeah.
One of the principles being that you respect the freedom of other people to be whoever they are. And you don't tell them that they have to be like you. If you don't like what they are, you just leave them in peace, right? It's like if there's someone I don't care for, I don't need to change them. Whereas I think in the fiat world, there's this tremendous pressure for everyone, you know, on each side to convert everybody else and to tell everybody else that how they are is evil and wrong and they need to be like this. There's this desire for a monoculture, you know, a homogeneity, that everyone, and if every problem will be solved if we're all believing exactly the same things.
Yeah.
And that's very anti-human because I think everyone's really individual. And when you realize that that's the precious and true nature of being a human being, that you're not a clone of everybody else, but you're an individual and your self-expression is the gift of you to others, right? It's not, you're not supposed to sacrifice yourself to others by pretending to be like them. You're supposed to be a gift to others by being yourself. And that's the biggest gift you can give to yourself to discover who you are and what your gift is to the world and experience that. That's the greatest satisfaction. It's a greater satisfaction than having a lot of money and buying things that don't actually give you satisfaction, right? Discovering who you are. And I think that for me is, I mean, that's my message to the Bitcoin world. Like Bitcoin will help you be who you are meant to be.
But it reminds me of one of my favorite David Bowie quotes, which is, aging is the process of slowly becoming who you were always meant to be.
That's beautiful. Yeah.
Which I think is true for people who are true to themselves, but it's not true for people who never, if you never self-reflect, the process doesn't happen.
Right.
And Bitcoin is self-reflection. Like the, it helps you remove all the noise from your life. It's not the signal in itself, probably. Yeah. But it removes the noise so you can see your own signal more clearly.
Yeah, it breaks away the cobwebs. Like the fiat world is the antithesis of be yourself, discover who you truly are, right?
Yeah.
It has lines like, oh, he who has the most toys when he dies wins. It's very focused on money. It tries to put, what's the net worth of people, right? And like, if you think about it, like the expression net worth comes from accounting. It's like assets minus liabilities. But it has this like, what's the value net of a person? And when you measure that, in a measure like a currency unit, like what's the worth of this person? It's like, you can exchange this person for $1 million. The net worth of Knut Sven Holm is $1 million. So I can get $1 million and that's equivalent to Knut Sven Holm. Like no amount of money in the world can replace Knut Sven Holm, right? No amount of money can replace you. No amount of money, like, people aren't measured in dollars. And yet that's exactly what is going on in the world, right? You type in the name of any celebrity into Google and it will autocomplete. Net worth, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, how much is this person worth? That's what people want. So, and why are people so focused and obsessed with how much money somebody else has, right? It's a second-handed otherness thing. It's like, oh, if I was Taylor Swift and I did whatever she did, I'd be worth, I don't know what she's worth, like $1 billion, $2 billion. And what are you going to do with $2 billion? And would that increase your worth? No. Like these are words to think hard about, right? Yeah. And when you start to really think about it, like, what's my worth to me? Well, it's no amount of money. I can't cash a check and be worth more to myself.
The word net worth is gross.
then you've got your gross worth.
Yeah, and it's the term GDP has the exact same problem.
Yes.
Like we're measuring the wrong things.
When we try to use money to measure everything, we miss all the values of the things that money can't buy.
And not only that, we're using the wrong yardstick to begin with.
Well, yeah, when you're using bad money to measure it, but I think it becomes part of the loop. Like, what I'm on right now, and I don't want to say this is the central description of it, but it ties into this, and it's like, we have a centralized economy run by a central bank. They don't have a lot of tools, so they don't manipulate every little thing in our lives. But they manipulate one very important thing, and they're very clear about this assumption. It's like they believe that they improve the economy and therefore improve the lives of everybody else, which itself may be a fallacy that a better economy means everybody's life is improved. But they improve the economy by encouraging consumption. This is very clear, right? There's no There's no dispute. I'm not putting words in anybody's mouth. If you encourage consumption, then that's good for the economy because things flow through the economy and the jobs are created. And there's something real. So on the surface of it, it sounds sensible. But when you actually take a closer look, it's like, well, the cost of encouraging consumption is the destruction of the purchasing power of the currency, right? So how do we, our tool to encourage consumption is to make the currency worth less more quickly, yeah. right? And to stimulate the economy so that people consume now rather than save. And the consequence of consuming now rather than saving is that no capital gets produced or less capital gets produced, less capital is saved. Everything is consumed quickly because the dollars fizzles away. And there's a feedback loop, which is it's not only that you don't want to save your money, it's eventually the money loses enough value that you don't want to work for it at all. And that's what we're confronted with. It's like in a world where you want to spend your money very quickly, you don't want to earn it either, right? Like, and so we have, this is one of the big problems we have is everyone's blaming the young generation for not wanting to work. Well, what are they working for? They're working for money that doesn't buy anything anymore because everything's been inflated and financialized. So what I think is missed by the economists who buy into this is hard money doesn't discourage spending and consumption. It encourages earning and saving. Yeah. And there's a very important distinction because if you have hard money, you will still spend it on things that you want and need, especially things that allow you to earn more money and save more money. But if nobody is encouraged to produce, to earn, then there's nothing to consume, right? And everything becomes this terrible game. And I think that's where, like, historically we're finding ourselves right now is this fiat mindset of consumption drives economic prosperity rather than the incentive to produce valuable things that people want to spend their hard-earned money against has been lost because we sidestepped the fundamentals of what makes for a good economy.
Yeah.
And a good economy is people producing things that other people want and people wanting to produce things because they're paid in real money for it so they can get other things that they want. There's no game that needs to be played to incentivize consumption. People know what they need to consume. But when you make it this game and then the marketing layers in and everybody gets worried about what their net worth is, because if you don't have $5 million, well, if you've clued into the inflation thing, you realize, by the time I'm retirement age, I don't have enough money, right? So you used to think you needed $1 million and now it's like $1 million isn't going to take you very far.
No. How did Angelo describe it? Like a meth addict digging a hole in his backyard and like, look at this big hole that I dug. Yeah, but did anyone ask you to dig the hole? Like, but this spending culture is like a drug, literally like a drug. Like you keep on doing, oh, look at these amazing things that, nobody asked for.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah, no, because they're not fulfilling your discovery of yourself. They're fulfilling the economist's desire to see consumption in the economy. And once you've fallen for it and you think, oh, me consuming is actually, it's good for me because I now have the latest car with the latest widgets and gadgets, and it's good for the economy because it employs people. You're kind of missing the point of what it means to be human. And it's because we're measuring everything in GDP, in dollar, I don't want to be specific about the currency. We assume that the money is the measure of everything. And it is not. We've already discussed that here, right? Money is not the worth of everything. Money needs to be a means towards the end, which is the worth of everything. But when it becomes the end in and of itself, we end up with the world we're living in, which I think history will look back on and say, those people went crazy. They were obsessed manically with money rather than with being human beings. And they gave up their humanity for the pursuit of money, which was easily producible to begin with. Because it was made up out of thin air. So they were really insane and they nearly ruined the environment and they nearly ruined all of human civilization and all of knowledge. And they came this close. Thank God for Bitcoin. Thank heavens for Bitcoin, however you want to put it, that came around and turned the ship.
We're thrilled to introduce our new sponsor, the BitBox 02 Bitcoin Only Edition.
BitBox.
It's fully open source, Swiss engineered, and Bitcoin only. Forever. The device only supports Bitcoin, which means less code, less attack surface, and improved security for your Bitcoin. Check out the BitBox 02 Bitcoin Only Edition at bitbox.swiss/freedom.
And use code freedom for And use code FREEDOM for 5% off.
Next up, Wasabi Wallet, the desktop wallet with CoinJoin built in so you can preserve your privacy.
Ooh!
It's easy to use and open source, and their recent Juggernaut update included loads of upgrades and new features.
Ooh!
They even added support for Bitbox. Go to wasabiwallet.io and download Wasabi today.
Ooh!
This reminds me of Jeff Booth's thoughts about this whole thing that we don't really crave money. What we crave in the end is love and belonging.
Mm-hmm.
And we like fiat makes us think that the way to that love and belonging is through Gucci bags and Lambos.
Totally.
When it really isn't. We're just missing the point. It's just noise. It makes that path to love and belonging harder and, you know, more difficult to navigate. In the end, we all want the same things, right? Yeah.
Well, I want to add to that because I think you can try to fake your way to earn love and belonging. Like I can come here and agree with everything you say, even if I don't.
No, you can't.
But I can, and again, this is something that many people do, especially within the fiat world, to achieve some sense of belonging and acceptance. And it's gotten to the point now where like you have to say, you have to virtue signal to have some form of acceptance, or you are ostracized and canceled in a way. But when you can actually be your true self, your sincere self, that doesn't mean everybody in the world will love you. It means the people who love what you are will love you.
Yeah.
Right. And so you don't have to fake your way and pretend to like something that you don't particularly like. You can just be yourself. And there are people who will love you for being who you are. And you will end up surrounded by people who love you for who you are, rather than surrounded by people who pretend to love you for what you pretend to be.
Yeah.
Right. And like, it's such a, so I'm not in disagreeing with Jeff, but what I'm saying is what's so important for everybody, if you want to find true love and true belonging, is to be your true self. And that is a hard thing for people to discover if you've been raised in a world where you've been indoctrinated with ideas, never thought for yourself, been told that pursuing fancy toys is the net worth of you and others. So you look at other people and say, he's rich, he's good, that's good. Like that, no, right? You've drawn some faulty conclusions, but they're so ingrained, so many of these ideas, that it's very hard for people to break out. And I think this to me is like, I'm going to bring Bitcoin into this. This is not where Bitcoin, by holding Bitcoin, you awaken from this, but by studying Bitcoin, when you hear the story of Bitcoin, it starts to shatter all these beliefs that you have.
Yeah.
And when you shatter these old beliefs, that opened the way, right? Like you're surrounded by a wall of indoctrination that says governments are all powerful. They can stop anything. Scientists have determined what can and can't be done. Corporations are all powerful and they will acquire and take over anything. And then you hear the story of Bitcoin and some anonymous person showed up with a solution to a problem that scientists said could not be solved. The Byzantine general problem hadn't been proven to be unsolvable. Well, he shatters that myth by solving the problem, right? And then they say, well, but the government will stop it because the government is all powerful and can do anything. Well, then the government can't stop this thing, the solution to this problem the scientists said can't be solved. Well, corporations will imitate it and compete with it, and corporations try and they can't compete with it. And so and don't forget, we're all selfish, greedy people who do things only for money, power, and fame. And Satoshi didn't do it for the money. He didn't keep the money. He didn't do it for the fame. We don't know who he is.
Okay. Interrupt you there, because
for sure.
That is likely, but it's not provable. He might
not
have done it for the money.
Well, he's
you
he's
don't
very,
know.
He hasn't spent any of the money
yet,
right?
He has diamond hands, that for sure, if he's now just waiting for the right point to sell. Mm. But you cannot...
So you think Satoshi's going to show up and buy a fleet of Lamborghinis and be fiat?
Okay, this is... I love this because I think this is where you and I slightly differ. And to our audience who don't know my history with Tomer, or our history together, sometimes people mistake us for the same person.
Like, yes, because we both wear hats.
We both wear hats. We have, now I have this beard.
You have a bigger beard now. Yeah. But
so it's easier
and
to
do. And you both have slightly funny names. Slightly.
Yeah, we have odd names. So,
yeah. So the thing
we're clearly the same person.
Yeah, we're very close
for
to
this
it,
issue.
Yeah. So I think, like, you often talk about Satoshi and Satoshi's sacrifice. And I love that story and that way of looking at it, that disappearing was this huge altruistic move but
again, you're using words that I wouldn't necessarily describe, but I'm not saying he was selfless. I'm saying he did it for a different reason than money. He did it for a different reason than power. He did it for a different reason than fame. He did it because he believed in creating decentralized money for the whole world.
And I'm saying that is plausible, but you cannot absolutely be sure that that is true. He might have been hit by the bus just after. And I see a danger in painting, in heroifying a human being instead of an idea. So if you paint Satoshi as this messianic hero figure,
right. Yeah, that we're going to have a good argument about
then
this.
As soon as you do that, that's when you get this. Some people think it's a good thing that they call us a cult. Mm-hmm. I think there's danger there. I think there's danger in putting someone up on a pedestal, regardless of how insanely good their idea was.
So I wrote an article about this called "Don't Tell Me There Are No Heroes in Bitcoin," right? And because people said there are no heroes in Bitcoin, slayer heroes, and I think the idea of being heroic is a very important idea, and I think everyone should strive to be as heroic as they can be, because there is a choice here, right? To stand with integrity and not sell out and not do something that's a compromise for a short-term thing is heroic. And I see that in the Bitcoin community. Like in this article, I talk about how, first of all, heroes look out for the little guy. And that's what you see in the Bitcoin community, right? We're looking out for people to prevent them from getting scammed by crypto, shitcoins, all this kind of thing. The dollar itself, the fiat currency. We're helping people to awaken. And that's a heroic thing. You're giving up your time, not in exchange for getting paid, but for doing what's right for other people. You can call that altruistic. Whatever it is, it's heroic. And I write in that article about what people went through the block size wars, because I thought that was people stepping up and having the integrity to challenge the corporations who thought they were all powerful and show them no, they weren't. And then I finish off with, and we have the greatest hero of all in our midst, Satoshi Nakamoto, someone who did all these things that I just listed off a few minutes ago, so I won't necessarily repeat them. And it was this heroic action, and it also, like, on top of it layers into the superhero story, like the masked vigilante who comes in and you don't know his true identity. He's not doing it for fame. He's not doing it for power. He's doing it for the sake of doing the good thing that he created. And so I'm not saying he wasn't selfish in his pursuit. He wanted it as his expression of his true self to realize the ability that he could create this thing. And to create this thing meant not to do it for the money, the power, or the fame, because the whole idea of it was totally decentralized money. So he knew in its creation that he had to hide his identity and that he would likely have to vanish at some point. And so he did.
So I agree with almost all of that. So I think there are plenty of heroes in Bitcoin. Luke is one. You're one. Like almost everyone here is one.
Totally.
Like
I finished my essay by saying, don't tell me there are no heroes in Bitcoin. Just be one.
Yeah. And absolutely Satoshi is one.
Yeah.
It's just this thing with Satoshi disappearing that seems very much like the ultimate sacrifice, the ultimate heroic act. And I somewhat hope that it was.
Mm-hmm.
But I cannot prove that it was.
Yeah.
It might just have been a coincidence.
This is why you have no faith.
No, I don't. Not in this sense. I choose to say a skeptic. And the thing is, if I didn't have this personality trait of being this skeptic, wait, but why person, I wouldn't have found Bitcoin. Because it's the don't trust, verify.
Right, but now that you found it, you can surrender and accept that Satoshi's a hero.
Yes, but I'm not the surrendering kind. Sorry.
You can just accept it.
We're now partnered with the Bitcoin Advisor, your best choice for collaborative multi-sig custody. The Bitcoin Advisor guides you every step of the way, from taking self-custody of your Bitcoin to securing it in their multi-sig vaults. Estate planning and inheritance is built in, so your loved ones can have peace of mind.
And you know what the best part is? Me and Luke are Bitcoin Advisors. So you can contact us. We can advise you about Bitcoin and Bitcoin custody, how to make custard, anything really. We're Bitcoin Advisors.
So visit us at thebitcoinadvisor.com/freedom or send us a DM or email to get started.
Contact us within 2 weeks and we'll throw in a free set of steak knives. Maybe.
The show is also sponsored by Orange Pill App, the Bitcoin-only social network where you can stack friends who stack sats. Make local connections and find all the nearby meetups, see what's going on in your area, and connect with Bitcoiners around you. And now, with a brand new merchant section, it's easier than ever to find and connect with local businesses that accept Bitcoin.
The best part about Orange Pill App is that you know that it's high signal because you're paying for Orange Pill App, and so is everyone else. There are no Asian ladies asking you how your trade is going on Orange Pill App, because it's not a trading app. It's a dating app. Is it a dating app?
So download the Orange Pill App on Apple or Android, send us a DM, and start building your local network of Bitcoiners.
So speaking of heroes in Bitcoin.
Yes.
Like, to take this in a slightly different direction. Yeah. You fought in the block size wars.
Yes.
Yes. You fought bravely.
Yes.
You were at the front lines.
Yes.
Banner in hand.
Yes.
And now, are we in a block size
space
wars?
War.
Block space wars. Yeah. Are we now in the block space war? The clone wars, if you will. Like,
right.
The JPEG clone wars.
This is a different... So if you're referring to like the ordinals and inscriptions phenomenon, it's a different thing. Like no two wars are the same, right? And this initially felt like, oh, this could be the block space wars. There'll be the filtering versus the non-filtering or the soft fork to prevent. But it's too early to tell exactly what it is. The one big takeaway that I have from this is, this is not going to sound very profound, but when I elaborate, it'll be a bit of an insight. It's like, it's very hard to change Bitcoin. So the side that has, and it's hard to change the policy. It's harder to impose a soft fork. It's hard to the point of nearly impossibility to impose a hard fork. A hard fork, everyone has to upgrade, and anyone who doesn't upgrade doesn't move forward. So changing Bitcoin is really, really hard. And whichever side is on the side of trying to make changes versus leave it exactly the same is at a strategic disadvantage in the war, right? Like, yes. they need to get everybody else
there's
to change.
There's always a case for conservatism in Bitcoin.
Yes, there's always, right? So what we're seeing with the inscription ordinal thing is like Bitcoin as it is permissive of these things, right? They fall within the rules. And so the Bitcoin conservatives, if you will, like, you know, some people will label themselves Bitcoin conservatives on the grounds that it should only be monetary uses, but they're actually the ones who are trying to change Bitcoin to make it so that it's only monetary uses.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
I mean conservative in terms of when I use the word, I mean it in terms of not changing.
Exactly. So like, so it's funny, like the inscribers are the conservatives in this particular battle, whereas the progressives are the traditional. You know, the traditional progressives versus the innovative conservatives. And so that's what's making this a unique kind of battle. And the inscriptions themselves, while at first they seemed like, oh my God, they're going to make it too expensive to use Bitcoin. They're really slowing it down. It's an attack. The government can do it. All this kind of stuff. It's like, well, okay. It seems like it's something that comes and goes, like a seasonal flu or something. So it's an inconvenience, but it's not a fatal infection. And so I think that there's a lot of people who aren't prepared to fight a war against COVID, right? Like if that's what it is, who aren't prepared to fight a war against it. There are people who think that it's very important to fight a war against it. There are people who are taking advantage and seeing how far away they can get with these things. Like I think these things are scams. I appreciate that they're also spam, and I don't know that there's anything that can really be done about it other than to educate people that these things are scam. Like, get out there, be a hero, tell people to be careful, and that will reduce the demand for these things, and it'll reduce the amount of people who use them, benefiting the whole environment, and it'll reduce the amount of people who get hurt by them, benefiting the individuals who are naively being tricked into buying things that aren't real.
Yeah, the way we try to put the narrative we're trying to push here is like, the if you're going to be a miner, make sure you're a miner, not just a hash salesman.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that you know what you're mining. Like,
right, and it's hard. It's very hard to be a miner, not a hash salesman.
Yes.
Right. Like, because there's only one pool that'll even give you a choice of. So Ocean's the only one that allows you to choose. And when we finally get Stratum V2 in a number of different places, then the choice to become a hero as a miner, right? Like if you've got a mining machine, you can actually become a miner. Right now you're just a hasher, right? And so I think that'll be a real test to see. But this is not a war. Like I don't see this as, I'll be the first to admit, when I first started seeing this thing and it got up, and like, oh, we're going to have another war. This will be the block space war as opposed to the block size, because the block size we've limited to four megabytes of virtual size. That's not changing, though. That war is over, but the fight over the space of what fits it, like what goes in the block space, is going to be a battle. But I think it's going to play out differently than a war. I think this is going to be a much slower evolution. I don't think we're going to see any soft forks to prevent the inscriptions. No. I think it's a battle of time will make a lot of these things go away, but it could get worse before it gets better.
So it's a war of attrition?
I think eventually, because it really is just shit coins on Bitcoin, right? And shit NFTs on Bitcoin. And that's the new flavor. That's the new narrative. But the fate of shit coins ultimately is they have very little volume. They have very little value. They have no value, but people are misled to it. And so they end up with very little volume. And I think that's what we'll ultimately see. We'll see some ugly moments that are really scary. There'll be some new coin that, you know, someone mints on Bitcoin and it looks like it's going to really clog the network, and the people behind it are going to celebrate and they think they're going to get rich. But then people will realize it has no value, that something else new will come along. And that's what happens to all of these altcoins, right? It's like, it's the shiny new thing until the next shiny new thing comes in, and then it gets forgotten about. And eventually people realize, all these shiny new things turned out to be worthless. And that thing that I was told to keep an eye off of, it turned out to be the value. It's like in the story of the Cave of Wonders in Aladdin, you're supposed to go into the cave and there's all these jewels, all these shiny things. But if you touch any of them, the cave swallows you and destroys you. But there is this one crusty old lamp, brass lamp in the end. And that's what the only thing you need to bring out, because it contains the genie that will grant you wishes. That's Bitcoin in the world of crypto, right? Like all these cryptos promise everything. They're bejeweled, they're dazzling, they're shiny, they're glittery, but you touch them and they destroy you and the Cave of Wonder swallows you. And only if you go to the very end and take that one true thing, the real treasure, the hidden treasure here that looks less sexy, but contains the real value, is what ends up happening. So I think this is just another path to discovering it. Bitcoin, maybe the last point I'll make is people get upset when Bitcoin gets attacked. And I'd encourage them to take a different view. Bitcoin needs to be attacked. Every attack that's possible against Bitcoin needs to happen to demonstrate to the world that Bitcoin can survive every type of attack that can be foisted on Bitcoin. So it has to go through these growing pains, and every exploit and everything needs to be thrown at it so that the world can see that it can survive it. So it's tough to live through these things, but you only show your strength when that strength is challenged. You can walk around saying, I'm indestructible, I'm anti-fragile, show me, but only through proof do you demonstrate. And so these forms of things, which are attacks of sorts on Bitcoin's core proposition, need to be attempted, and they need to be demonstrated as failures. And I'm very confident these things will fail they will fail at harming Bitcoin's monetary use case. None of these inscriptions are things, they're noise, blah, blah, blah. None of them have diminished Bitcoin's use case as money one iota, right? So Bitcoin is demonstrating this, and it's a different way to look at it. And maybe
interesting choice of words.
having been one of the shit coins that was once worth $3 billion, and I'd be surprised if it's worth $300 million today, and at extremely low volume, right? Trading, probably dump $30 of it a day.
So these faces are rites of passage, if you will, then.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So let me see what you think about this thought, because I've been, as always, when something interesting happens in Bitcoin or something unusual happens in Bitcoin, I try to see if there's a philosophical thought around this that can explain what's going on without going into detail and just basically in a tweet format. The way I see it, and that made me think about fees in general and what will happen to them in the future, because the narrative we've always told is that fees are going to go up in the future because of the block reward portion, the miner's reward portion being the block subsidy being smaller and smaller, and the fees going up. But if you think about it, the only thing in Bitcoin that is not made up of data is the Satoshi itself. because the Satoshi is more than just data, because it lives within us and it doesn't exist at all on the blockchain. It's just unspent transactions. So it's this ephemeral thing that is in the thing, but we can't touch it. And that's the thing that is absolutely finite. That's the thing that cannot be copied. That's the thing that is unique. Anything else, including the next block, there will always be a next block. It's much more plausible that there will be another block with block space in it than that there will be more than 21 million Bitcoins. So, which means that in the long run, the Satoshi will outprice everything else, including block space. So on a really long time horizon, I suspect fees will, in sats at least, go down. They're diminishing over time, simply because of the fact that the sat is finite and block space is not. It's finite for a certain time period, but not over eternity. Where am I going with this?
Well, you're trying to make the case that we don't need to worry about fees being too high.
No, not in the long. Just to clarify, the cost of sending a Bitcoin will go up in terms of purchasing power, but not in terms of satoshis.
Satoshis.
Yeah. Do you agree?
Well, so I'll say I don't actually know, right? And I think
I don't claim to know either. Yeah, but
and neither you nor I are actually going to live probably to see it.
No.
So this is a question for the next generation. I suspect that whichever way it plays out, things will be fine. It won't be an existential risk to Bitcoin. And if it is, then it's a problem for the Bitcoiners of that age to figure out what changes need to be made to solve it if it turns out to be a problem. And I'm sure they will be confronted with this, you know, this high time preference thing of, oh, it looks like it's going to be too expensive. And other people saying, no, don't worry, it'll resolve itself. And it'll be hard to change, but there will be forces to change. Like, this is always going to be the case because there's always human beings with ideas around what will be. So the thing that I have a pretty strong position on is, let's not fix things that aren't broken yet, right? So there might be people who are saying, oh, we need to increase the block size, or we need to increase a tail emission, create a tail emission, or all these things to solve this problem that is the next generation's problem to solve. And that, like, I got enough problems that I don't need to solve the problems that I can't analyze well, and I can only theorize about. So that's my take on it. I don't actually know, and I don't have a strong opinion as to whether or not it will go down. I think it's kind of a theoretical thing that I can play out. It could go in different ways. But I think if there is a problem, then it's a problem for the next two generations from now to solve. And if there isn't a problem, then will you at least admit that Satoshi was a divine hero who had vision?
I will never know, and I'm fine with never knowing. Like, I accept that there are some things that I will never have an answer to. And I think that is because I believe the core of all human problems are the wish for there to be a free lunch. That's why we have inflation. That's why we think we can redistribute wealth. And that's why we, all these things, why we have so much debt. And that includes the wish for there to be a heaven or a savior or a divine influence. That is also, in my view, that it's also the notion of I want there to be a free lunch. If this is all there is, like, to me, that is what makes life valuable. This is all I have.
Mm-hmm.
Every moment mm-hmm. is my last chance to enjoy that particular moment. If mm-hmm. I don't, it's gone forever.
Yeah.
It's like block space.
But you said there's an infinite amount of block space. So aren't you, by that definition, implying that we live forever?
Yeah, but each block is finite.
Like, yes. But, every minute
so,
is.
So it's...
Yeah.
So
that's blocks what are like right. time, right? Like,
yeah.
They literally...
They are time.
Yeah. they're here and gone, and if you don't fill it up with useful stuff, then it's gone. Then that space is gone forever. You don't put 1 megabyte into this block, and then you get an extra 3 in the next block. Each one is limited to 4 megabytes, and they each come by once every 10 minutes on average. So
yes,
if you send the bus empty, and this is part of what the argument that I think some of these inscription advocates say. Well, You weren't using all the space. Now we're using it, and it's got some utility. My point is to that is that you're using it for scams that don't actually. Yeah. So that's my criticism of it. But it's a valid criticism to say this time this moment is passing, and you're, and the only thing you're doing in this moment is writing Bitcoin transactions down when you could be putting these lovely monkey JPEGs down in addition. Again, clearly these inscriptions are scams. I just want to be real clear. Don't buy them. Don't invest in them. Don't pawn them off on people.
Don't even talk about them, which I always say, and then I end up talking about them anyway.
Wanting to make the most out of this scarce resource that passes by as time is not an evil idea, right? It's what you do, like wanting to do more evil with the limited amount of time that we have is an evil idea, but wanting to do more with the limited time that we have is not.
No. Or yes. What was I supposed to say? No or yes?
I clearly weren't even listening at all.
Oh, Luke. My goodness. We're
save me.
This is quite the conversation here. Absolutely. Whirlwind of topics. I'll take it in a different direction again. Tomer, can you give us a little bit of a preview of what you came here to talk about at the conference? I think we heard something about consciousness. What's on your mind there?
Okay. That's a nice save.
Segway.
Sorry. Well, I think we've partly been talking about this already, which is that Bitcoin rescues you from this the fiat consciousness, right? That the most people who are attracted to Bitcoin first hear about it, and they hear about it and they think it's a get rich quick scheme. The very fiat view is, ooh, I can get more fiat money, and fiat is the net worth of all things. So here I go, and I'd be able to buy a Lamborghini and a nice house and not have to work, right? All these fiat things, like, so you don't work and you consume. That's exactly what the fiat economists want, right? So that's what Bitcoin draws people in with. But there's this change in consciousness that happens to Bitcoiners. Like, we're not walking around. And if we were in a conference 8 years ago, there were a lot of people who were very excited about how fiat rich they were going to get. You don't really see people here talking about, can you imagine how rich we're going to be? Michael Saylor did a presentation yesterday, and his last slide was all about the spiritual journey of what Bitcoiners get. When he was even talking about it as an investment, it was about, it protects families, right? It protects the values of companies as ideas for creating value and producing values. This isn't about fiat consumption. And that's the transformation that happens. And I was talking about it a little bit before. I think there's many paths that Bitcoiners go through to start to experience this transformation. There's a few articles that I wrote a couple of years ago. One is called Rich or Poor, Bitcoiners Have What Money Can't Buy. And it was just like, you hear about Bitcoin, you hear it's about getting rich. So you start to study it. And you learn about money, and you learn about how money works. And so you're forced to learn about this, and you learn about the mathematics of Bitcoin, or you learn about proof of work, you learn about energy, you learn about the environment, you learn about all of these things, and you question it, and you talk to people, and you make friends, and you discover all these things. And so at the end of the day, you've become smarter, right? Well, intelligence is not something that money can buy. You become a more independent thinker. You can't buy that for money. You can't like go to a store and say, I'd like to buy independent thought, right? You have friends. You have conviction in yourself. These are not things you can buy for money. And so the process of becoming a Bitcoiner, going through all these checks and balances, validating, doing the proof of work of yourself, understanding what proof of work is something that gives you integrity, friendship, intelligence, independence. And those are all things that money can't buy. And whether you have a lot of Bitcoin or a little Bitcoin, you end up with these things that money can't buy, and you go through this process. And so there, that's like one element of spiritual awakening and spiritual growth that happens just by being curious enough to ask, well, is this thing going to make me rich? And by the time you're done, it's like, it's made me rich, right? It's made me rich in the sense of I have all these things that give me confidence and conviction and happiness without having to spend money. So it's really powerful. And
this is so close to the thing I always repeat, like a thing my grandfather said, like on my father's side. I never met the guy, but my dad really liked the expression, and that is, that which you can do without, you own.
Right.
And like, the more I think about that, even to this day, the more profoundly true it becomes, because it's the flip side of your things and end up owning you. You have a big yacht, you need to maintain, like...
Even if you have a lot of money, like now you have to protect the money and invest it and do all this stuff with it. It doesn't buy you the peace of mind that you thought it did.
Yeah, and Bitcoin is the embodiment of exactly that. It is pointing out to everyone that that which you can do without your own.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's, yeah, I don't know if we'll all end up being Buddhist monks at some point, but...
Mm-hmm. But we'll know what's enough, right? And I think this is, like, Fiat says, it's never enough. He who dies with the most toys wins. You have one yacht, you need a second yacht. You have two yachts, you need a bigger yacht, right? Like, there's no, this is sufficient, right? Which is ironic in so many different ways, because it doesn't ask you to ask, what do you actually want for yourself? It's just feeding you ads and consumption and lifestyle ideas that say, look at this person with this big mansion. Look at this celebrity with their private jet. Look at all of this, right? And those people aren't necessarily happier. They're caught up in some machine that is, now you have to make more money to maintain your private jet and your seven villas and your mansions and put flowers in all of them. And so you don't, and these are not things that make you rich. They're not satisfying at all. Owning a house that you've never been to and financing it, like, you know, Joe Walsh has that song about having too much money, and he says, I have a mansion, I forget the price, I've never been there, they tell me it's nice. I think that's one of the verses from it. Life's been good to me. That's like the epitome of fiat.
Yeah, there are so many things that come off of that, like a lawn, for instance. Like, you need to mow the lawn. Like, the lawn was invented in the UK to show people where the limit of your lands were, so that to keep people out. But it's no place in nature. And now all of a sudden you need a lawnmower. And right, like in suburban Sweden, like automatic lawnmowers, robotic lawnmowers, and trampolines, they were the latest thing that every single neighbor needed to have. Like, in Spain, it's probably the pools, the swimming pool. Every garden needs a swimming pool. Everyone needs a trampoline. Keeping up with the Joneses. Another thing in Sweden that was big was like a box on the roof of your car for your skis. Like,
that seems,
and everyone
very Swedish,
wanted a fancier box on the roof of the cars. And all of these things, it's just chasing that. It's like a heroinist chasing the next hit, right? It leads you nowhere.
Like, I'm the first to admit, I was caught on that treadmill for a long time. I'm still not entirely off of it, right? Like, I grew up in a Fiat world, and my parents would drive us around, and we would look at fancy houses, and I desired fancy houses. Right? Like, it was ingrained into me, and, you know, that aspiration. And there's nothing wrong with having an aspiration to have more betterment. But when it's purely for the sake of
keeping up with the Joneses.
Yeah, keeping up with the Joneses, or making impressions on other people, or you don't appreciate how much work it is versus how much benefit is.
When it's signaling.
Yeah.
That's why.
Yeah, when it's secondhand. It's not, I'm enjoying it. It's like, what I'm enjoying is that other people think that I'm enjoying life more than them.
Yeah.
I'm not actually happier than them, but at least they think I'm happier than them. Yeah. They're sad because, so it's all secondhanded. It's not you expressing yourself and figuring out what is true. And you may be someone who needs a very big house because you're doing all these things, but you're when you know what it is that you want, you can be very simple about what your needs are. And then as you're growing, if you've saved your money and you have money that's reliable and you've discovered what it is that you want, that's one thing to spend your money on. To spend it on something that further advances and develops your discovery of your true self. If you're an artist, more art equipment. If you're a musician, more music equipment. If you're a builder, more tools. Like, all of these things, and some of these things you don't need to spend money on. You need to spend time on learning, but you may need tools to practice with. So that's what the purpose of money needs to be. It doesn't need to be that, you know, to conspicuous consumption.
No.
Right.
And all this, you know, competing with your neighbors, at the end of the day, it's envy. It's driven by envy.
Yeah.
Which is also what's driving, the driving force behind all left-wing political ideologies. It's driven by envy to a large extent, I think.
Yeah. It's take from those who have to give to those who don't, because those who don't envy those who have.
And envy is a deadly sin, right? And I think envy is very much connected to the wish for there to be a free lunch. It's basically the same thing.
Yeah.
And envy doesn't lead to anywhere good. It leads to a very poor. And if you live your life in, you know,
I want what that other person has.
Yeah. And comparing yourself to others all the time, you're never going to get anywhere. Yeah.
Like,
anywhere
listen, happy. You may not completely agree with this, but I think every person within them has like the most beautiful uniqueness about themselves. And they need to love that. They need to recognize that and accept it and love themselves for who they are.
I do accept Craig Wright,
not hate themselves. Well, somewhere deep inside Craig Wright, there's something, right? But you talk about envy and wanting to be someone else, right? Like envy is, I want to be like that other person. He's like, he's taking it to the extreme of claiming, I am that other person.
He's
right?
wins the envy race.
Yeah. So it's kind of envy driven, but there's something so beautiful about every single person.
I'm sure he has redeeming qualities.
If you just recognize what that is and live that within yourself and develop that, then you will be, as we said before, you will be loved and admired for what you are. And there are people who will love you and admire you for what you are, but you have to be prepared to be that. If what you're trying to do is be like the Joneses, but with a bigger ski rack, nobody's going to love you for that, right? So, in fact, you're not doing it to generate love. You're doing it to generate envy, which is a form of hate. It's like, I fucking hate that guy. Now I got to work so much harder to get a bigger ski rack on my car than him. Because if he never got that bigger ski rack, I wouldn't have to get this bigger ski rack to make him envy me. So it's like this race of getting more people to hate you. And you realize you're not actually achieving you're not achieving love. You're not achieving acceptance. You're actually trying to achieve jealousy and hatred towards yourself. That's kind of counterproductive if love is what we're after. You should get a smaller ski rack.
In the words of Frank Zappa, you are what you is, and that's all there is.
Oh man. Hey, I think we should probably wrap this up because you've got to get to your next your book signing here, Tomer. But this has been a lot of fun. Any last thought? Like, it's not super super tight here, but any last thoughts about this conference and your impressions of Madeira, all that? You've already covered it somewhat.
Where can we find you online and all that?
You're skipping ahead. I'm asking another question.
So the conference is amazing. This is as far as, like, I'm getting to meet certain people for the first time ever who I've known for years, Europeans in particular. And so just the chance to meet people again in person who you've known for years is really touching, right? It's like, it makes you cry and you hug it out. So there's been a lot of hugging and crying and the place is beautiful. Right. As I was saying earlier in the podcast, this is a place I can probably get my family to come to. And it's a place that's embracing Bitcoin. So there's just there's a lot to be said for this. I'm sure there will be one here next year, and I'm sure I'll be coming back to it again. It's a real winner, and it's nice that we now have one called Atlantis or Atlantic and one Pacific. We got all the oceans covered, for Bitcoin. So it's really a delight. What was the other question?
Now you can go ahead and ask.
Where can you find me?
Okay, yeah. But first, right back at you. I mean, it's wonderful to see you again and having this reunion with you in Fractal. Of course, we miss Brecky from our little thing in Miami there,
right?
2 years ago,
right?
But where can people find you online and your work?
Yeah, so at Tomer Sterlite on Twitter, X, you'll find my NPub there as well. So you can find me on Nostr at the very top. And Tomer Sterlite on Nostr as well. A lot of these essays that we've talked about are, I don't publish much on Medium anymore, but they're still all on Medium. So Medium, Tomer Sterlite. I publish a lot of my articles on the Swan blog, swan.com/blog. There's a couple of movies that I've been involved in making, and there's a couple more coming out. I really encourage people to see Bitcoin as Generational Wealth if you just Google that. It's a really touching movie, and there's a whole long story behind it, but it's just the story's longer than the movie. The movie's under 15 minutes long. And for Bitcoiners who are looking for that, why am I in this? What are we in this for? I think it provides a historic context and a vision into the future that is quite moving.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
And give us a hug.
For sure.
This has been the Freedom Footprint Show. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and brush your teeth.